Marketers are often too focused on acquisition and not enough on retention, renewal, and advocacy. It's fair, acquiring new customers is exciting, but if you struggle to make them stick around to become advocates of your product, you'll struggle to build a sustainable business. Today, Nick Bennett, co-founder of Tack, shares his people-first go-to-market strategy. In episode 63 of the Marketing Power Up Show, you learn, first of all, the importance of increasing renewals and advocates. Second, how to create campaigns focused on increasing renewals. Third, how Nick generated over 81 G2 reviews in 48 hours. And number four, a power-up that has accelerated Nick's career. Before we get started, I've created a free PowerUp cheat sheet that you can download and apply Nick's people first go-to-market strategy. Get it now at marketingpowerups.com or find that link in the show notes and description. Are you ready? Let's go.
Marketing Power-Ups. Ready? Go! Here's your host, Ramley John.
Nick, I'm super excited to be talking about people first go-to-market model that you've been working with Mark. Maybe let's jump in. Like, how did it come about? Like, you and Mark were chatting. You were both working at the same company, and then I guess through conversation, they're like, "This is what we need to focus on." And did it just come about? Like, how did it come naturally, or did you workshop it through over time? Like, I'm curious how this model that you and him have been working on came about.
Yeah. So he was actually the CMO of AirMeet, and I was on his team. And funny enough, like, I worked for Alice before that. And Mark and I went to dinner, like, it was like October of like 2022. And we were talking about, like, hey, you know, future, like, what's next? He's like, hey, why don't you come, like, build out this, like, creator thing at AirMeet? And for anyone that's listening, AirMeet is a virtual event platform. And so I was like, all right, cool. Like, I was exploring what's next. And so I went, and I had a team of about five or six people. But I led this creator piece. I led events, field marketing, community, social media. So I had a lot of different pieces that reported to me. And June of this year, he was like, hey, I'm going to have to lay you off. And I was like, yeah. And I was like, ooh. When I've gone through this before, and I was like, you know what? No big deal. Like, I get it. Like, it's tech. Tech is a bloodbath right now anyways.
Yeah, it is.
So I was like, all right. And then he was like, I'm going to be leaving as well.
Oh, okay.
Have you ever thought, like, would you ever be open to starting a company together?
Oh, what?
And at the time I was like, well, I just had twins. And I was like, at the time they were probably like 2 or 3 months old. And I was like, I don't know. Like, is this a good time? Like, but I was like, you know what? Screw it. Like, who cares? Like, let's try it. The fortunate thing of, like, building your brand online is, like, if something doesn't succeed, you can go back and, like, ask people for a job. You can reach out to your connection. Someone's going to help you find something. So I was like, listen, I'll give it a few quarters. If it doesn't work, I'll go find a W-2 job, and I'll just kind of, like, start over. And we did it. We soft launched it in June.
I saw that was cool. Yeah. Pack, right.
Yeah. Yep. And then we hard launched it August 1st. So he finished up his time at AirMeet through the end of July. And then, come August 1st, we were like, all right, we're going all in on this. And so we actually rented we chartered a boat. We hired a video crew, and kind of, we went out and, like, shot all this content of, like, what Tack is, what people first is, all that stuff, because we wanted to kind of, like, everyone, I mean, if you think about people first, like, you've probably been doing it a majority of your life, but, like, people just don't, like, connect the dots. And so if you think about a people first go to market, it's a pretty simple sentence. It's like a business strategy that uses relationships and partnerships to create, capture, and convert demand into revenue. But it's designed to put people at the center of every interaction and experience. So you don't have to be a B2B company to do this. There's lots of, like, I mean, your butcher shop, like your fishmonger, like all these different shops that might be in your town or city or whatever, like, they're probably people first to a certain degree as well. If they're putting people at the center of everything, and just kind of, like, not relying on that company first mindset, it does a lot.
That makes sense. I like how you and Mark launched it. There's this concept I call it hype. you know, people who can hype up something. And then I remember just like, first of all, you started with a teaser. It's like, we're launching something. And then there was like a picture of a sailboat or something. I can't remember. Yeah. And then you out comes this video and it looked like a rapper music video. you're both on a big boat and then you're just talking about it. How did that concept come about? I mean, maybe it's a play on word with the word tack.
So it is. And I'm not a sailor. Like, I didn't actually know what the name meant. Mark grew up sailing. He's from Newburyport, Mass. So like on the water. And so a tack is actually how you change like direction on a sailboat. So like when you put up the sails, you tack and that's how you turn. And so it's like, all right, cool. The pressure on any business today is immense. And so you need to be able to tack in different directions. And so it's basically shifting like a tide shift kind of like.
Yeah.
It is a model that's, again, very much focused on like partnering with software to partnering with people to grow. And so that's how you move. I've learned a ton about sailing, which is crazy.
That's so good. And then the video around the sailboat, I'm guessing Mark was the one. It's like, let's hire a sail. Let's go get on a boat. Let's do this video. Let's check this out.
It was his idea. And I was like, oh yeah. Like, and it was literally a beautiful day to like be out on the water too. And like, we were out there for like 3 hours and it was just like so much fun to be able to just kind of like, one, learn how to basically drive a sailboat, but two, like understand like what this all means and how it plays into like the larger story.
That makes sense. I like that. That's, you know, we don't see that as, I think we're seeing that more and more where people are thinking about like doing creative ways to launches. I'm seeing Mutiny do this where like they last Christmas they hired a rapper to sing like a song or, you know, it's, I mean, maybe I think that's part of this model here.
Yeah.
Visually, I'm going to show it on the screen for people who are watching this on YouTube. It's like this circle, this loop with, community-led growth, member-led growth, and customer-led growth. Can you talk a little bit about like how, I mean, you don't have to go through every single one, but like why this particular shape with this circle and how, you know, how to essentially describe it?
Yeah, so there's really like 7 go-to-market pieces that fall under like this whole people first thing. And so you have channels, you have offers, and they all kind of play a different way. So ultimately, what you want to do is using the 3 different types of channels, the 3 different types of offers, and an overall partnership strategy that kind of encompasses the entire thing. And so each channel is designed to create, capture, and convert demand at different stages of the customer journey. And the offer gives your business an infinite ways to create value and build trust with your buyers and customers. Now, each channel becomes more efficient when you partner with others. Like, no one should go to market alone. Why? I mean, it's just think about that. It's like, you know, it's like kind of like a loner. It's like, why not go to market with others? And so each channel should ideally be crafted through a partnership with either other people or businesses. And so partnering with people is like the heart of the model, which kind of wraps around the entire thing.
That makes a ton of sense. I know particularly you wanted to chat around this customer-led growth concept. Let's dig into that and double tap into that. I feel like most marketing teams often focus on, you know, this is something I think I saw on LinkedIn, how you mentioned that most teams, marketing teams focus on acquisition and not enough on building those, you know, customer relationships and those renewals and advocacy. Is that what that piece means? Or like, I'm curious how you would define customer-led growth.
Yeah, so we've actually put together kind of like a maturity model to a certain degree of like how we view customer-led growth. So when you think about like stage one, the outcome that you're really trying to achieve through stage one is customers and adoption. You need customers and adoption before you get into all that other stuff. And so how can you identify the most engaged customers? How can you partner with them to share their stories, their examples, their successes, creating content together, education that ultimately is going to help other customers use more of the product? So like that's stage one when I think about it. Now, stage two takes it to, all right, cool. You have the customers, you have the adoption. Now, how can I focus on retention and advocates? So this is where like a customer advisory board might come into play, or like a voice of customer program. And you're going to partner with customers to really drive product innovation that's going to activate other audiences. So it's like you're designing all of these marketing campaigns and these offers that feature your customers. I mean, it's like it plays into that whole like net revenue retention number, yeah. All those things. The third piece, now that you have retention, you have advocates, you have customers, you have adoption, is how do you take your advocates one step further? So it's like the outcome is advocates in referrals, because the referrals is going to fuel the net revenue growth there. And so it's like, how can you build tiered customer programs? How can you build different experiences for different segments of customers across your go-to-market team? I don't know, maybe it's enterprise, maybe it's commercial, whatever it is. Maybe you're hosting a flagship summit event for your customers. Right. Maybe you're building a model that's going to predict renewal and referrals. It's, you can do a lot when it comes to like customer-led growth. The important thing is when you think of like the tenets that like make up customer-led growth, there's really four that come to mind to me. Value first, reciprocity, voice of customer, and deeper education. So like those are the things that make up customer-led growth. Now, what are the components that drive those tenets ultimately? Customer stories, references, reviews. I know we talked about like G2 reviews. I've done this before. Advisory board, product training, customer examples. So like all those things, the components plus the tenets make up like what customer-led growth is.
I love how you describe the stages. That's how you naturally would build a deeper relationship with a friend. You know, first you would like, hey, let's hang out. The next thing you know, like, let's go on a trip. And then next thing you know, it's like, hey, bring your other friends so that they can, I guess, have a bigger group of friends. I'm not that sure. I think that's kind of the maturity. It's almost like a friendship maturity model. If you like, how do you get deeper relationship with your customers?
Exactly. And that's the thing. Relationships are at the center of everything. I mean, you know, people buy from people. Like this is the way forward. So
that makes a ton of sense. And you're talking about the different pieces here. If you were to advise a company who is just starting with customer-led growth, I guess the first step is like, hey, let's focus on adoption. What kind of stuff would you advise them around customer education, to educate them around the product? Or I'm curious what your approach is for a company who's never done any kind of customer-related marketing.
So I did this at Alice, actually. So I took over customer marketing there for a short period of time. And so what I realized was we had a really strong relationship with our admins that, again, they knew all the features. They were talking to CS. But the thing is, just because they're the admin of the account, what about all the users within the actual account itself? Like we literally weren't sending them emails. Like they didn't know anything unless like the admin told them specific stuff. So what I would recommend is like, whether it's a weekly, whether it's a bi-weekly, I think it has to be one of those two things. There has to be some type of like product education that comes out to all users. And maybe there's two different paths. Maybe there's an admin path because the way they're going to use the product is going to be different. And then there's kind of like a user path because what they're going to care about is going to be different. And it could even be third or fourth paths, depending on like, maybe it's like a CMO or VP of marketing. They may use the product or care about it in a different way as well. But it's a great way, in an easy way, with really no cost, to drive adoption of new features, new integrations, new releases that you have coming out, and a great way to amplify kind of asks that you may need to ask for them for referrals or other things. It's very low lift, but high reward. And if your goal is to decrease the time of value that someone sees of your product, because let's be honest, most SaaS products, you sign a 1-year contract. So if it takes you 3 months to see value for that product, you really only have 9 months left before your contract's up. And most likely that renewal conversation is going to happen 7 months into the contract. So you're saying you really have like 3 or 4 months outside of the ramp time to be like, all right, is this worth, I don't know, $50,000 a year? It's not good. And so my whole thing was, how can I decrease time to value to sub 30 days? Because if you can get time to value achieved in that 30-day window, they have 11 months of using that product, and obviously a little bit before the renewal conversation, but it changes like even like 30 days to 90 days. That's a huge window in where someone may be able to see additional value or adoption or additional users coming into the product.
That makes a ton of sense. I'm a big fan of, you know, like really setting up people for success and making sure that they know further, more advanced use cases or, you know, adopt the product even deeper. I guess if I was to take a step back, it makes sense to start this from the beginning, because I've had this, I'm curious what your advice is for this question around when is the right time for a company to start thinking about customer marketing? Is it when they're a scale up, they're over 150 employees, or is it like they should start thinking about it right from the beginning? Because what you're suggesting is like that sets them up for deeper relationship. I'm curious what your take is on that.
So I would say in today's economy, you should be thinking about it a lot sooner. Like if you asked me like 2 years ago, like I would say maybe a little bit different, but now, I mean, budgets are being frozen. So like your biggest growth channel for maybe expansion or renewals or money, just revenue in general, is through your customers. And if you're not focusing, I've seen a lot of companies not hire a customer marketer per se, but use customer success as kind of like that lever. And that's fine. Like you could definitely do that early on, but you're going to need someone in marketing. And maybe they do customer marketing plus something else if it's super early. I would say early on in today's economy makes way more sense, because if you think about how much it costs to retain a customer versus how much it costs to go out and acquire a new customer in tech specifically, like it's a no-brainer to double down on the retention, especially if you're kind of like a land and expand type of product.
Yeah.
You would see so much more success if you can already establish like the adoption, the advocates, all of those things.
That makes sense. I find, and this is based on my experience, that if there's not enough budget for a whole customer marketer, it often falls in the content team or maybe in product marketing. Is that what you see? You see like, oh, it's like, oh, content marketers, you talk to customers, create some content around that, or it's product marketing. Hey, like create some enablement stuff instead of sales, do it for enabling our customers to adopt bigger features. Is that what you're seeing, or is it?
Yeah, I've also seen product marketing play a big piece in that too in some companies. And again, it depends like how the organization is like set up, because I've worked for some marketing teams where there's like five of us, and like AirMeet, for example, we had like a 25 person marketing team. So like we had very specialized roles. And again, it depends, you know, are you early stage, are you late stage, big, small, all those things. But product marketing, content, like enablement, like seen all those pieces play a piece into like the customer marketing kind of, if you don't have that role.
That I like that. We're talking about adoption, but I want to talk about referrals around G2, because you shared something on LinkedIn a while back around how you're able to get quite a few G2 reviews in, I think the exact number is 72 in 2 days, and you use some kind of like NPS survey. How did you do that? Because like I think a lot of companies, even here at AppQuse, like, hey, we need more G2 reviews. Like, what do we do? But you actually did something super cool that I think people should hear and listen about, using NPS to get more reviews.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, it was super simple. So going back to like the user piece, so at Alice, like we didn't actually have I had to have engineering pull our users because we didn't have access to it. And in Salesforce, we only had access to the admins of the account. So I was like, all right, well, we're not emailing these people right now. So they haven't heard from us, but they're using the product. I can see they're leaving NPS surveys. Like it's something that we had in product, but I couldn't actually pull those results without engineering for some weird reason. So I pulled it and I was like, all right, great. I'm going to take all these customers who recently rated us on an NPS survey. I'm going to add them to Marketo. So, you know, again, I took the Marketo path because I was like, you know, no one wants BCC hell. Like, you know, you get all those emails on there.
Yeah,
like,
I know what you mean.
Yeah. And it's so, does it look a little less personalized? I guess maybe because, you know, it's coming from an automation platform, but I wrote it. I crafted an email that sounded like me. I kept it real, kept it simple. I told them, hey, I noticed your feedback. I offered them a gift because we were a gifting platform. It wasn't just a gift card. I personalized it to this specific thing. And I said, listen, I want you to leave us a G2 review. I'm not incentivizing you to give us a positive review. Honestly, if you have negative stuff, please tell me so I can tell our product team. Like, so many people think that this is bribery to a certain degree. I got a lot of hate from people thinking this was bribery. You're incentivizing people to give you feedback, good or bad. And that's the way that you need to think about it. So I shot the email out to about 310 people in Marketo, sat back and I was like, all right, let's see what happens. And so my inbox quickly filled up with screenshots of reviews, some solid feedback, some things that we could do better. But I said, all right, if you want your gift, you have to send a screenshot of your review, reply to this email and get back to me. And then I would reply back again, just through my regular Gmail. And they would go, oh, wow, you're a real person. I'm like, but we had a 24% conversion from those 310 people that actually left us a review. So it was 73 over 2 days, but it actually over a week ended up getting to about 85, which was crazy. And so I think as marketers, we like to overcomplicate things, and simple can still drive massive impact. Like this isn't like earth shattering what I did. And I know people that are like using this as like, they were like, you've helped me so much figure this out. And I was like, listen, I take no credit for this. I just was trying to figure out a way to incentivize feedback and like get stuff. And obviously, you know, we were a G2 customer, so we wanted to move up in like all these charts. The more reviews you get, the better you move up. But I mean, it wasn't like earth shattering what I did. I just, it was four simple things and that was about it.
What I like what you said was that you kept that email human. Like it sounded like you. I think often it's like, oh, let's find a template online and copy and paste and tweak it to our voice. But you're like, how do I make this sound like I'm asking a person, which goes back to what we've been talking about, how, you know, it's about building a relationship with that. And I'm guessing that was not the first time that they've heard from you before. So they know the name Nick, right? It wasn't like, who the heck is Nick who's messaging me? Would that be a fair assumption?
Yeah. And I mean, as a user of the product, like I was brought on to so many customer calls, so many prospect calls, because I was a field marketer. So like in event marketer, customer marketer, like, I knew the pains that these people were trying to solve because I was trying to solve them for 10 or 11 years. And I was like, listen, no salespeople need to join this call. Like, let's just talk marketer, marketer. And they valued those conversations so much. And I think more companies should lean into that human element, lean into like your subject matter experts. Like, why does a salesperson always need to be involved? Like, I was the salesperson to a certain degree. I didn't get paid like a salesperson, although I should have, because I closed a lot of deals, but I was doing it to drive the mission of the company.
That makes sense. You're like an evangelist essentially of that company. I'm curious what your take is on, I'm seeing more and more companies pick an intern or employee to be an evangelist. We saw this early with Dave Gerhardt with Drift and Elena Verna with Amplitude and, you know, different places. Is that something you would encourage to find? Like, it could be the founder, it could be somebody who is an expert in that space to be the, I guess, not necessarily the face, but like an evangelist, internal evangelist of the product and the company.
Yeah. So I actually did this at Alice. Like that was part of my role. That was part of my role at AirMeet as well. So like I was kind of like the face of the brand. So like I would talk to customers, prospects. I would speak at the events. Again, when you're a user of the product, it makes it a lot easier. And like you are the ICP. But I think the next wave that we're going to see is these B2B companies are going to start to leverage internal creators to drive like huge impact in 2024. We have the external creators, you know, people, and there's obviously a difference between creator and influencer, but I think there's a lot of creators, content creators that work within these companies that the companies need to figure out how to leverage them. And I'm not saying that, like, hey, you know, go pump like company content, because you shouldn't do that, but go tell your story, because you'd be surprised at how much revenue and impact you can drive just by evangelizing the category or what you stand for, that ultimately is going to drive impact to the business because they're going to see where you work.
That makes sense. You're writing a book, or like you, I think you've written a book around this. Am I crazy? So
I'm writing a book. Yeah. It's, nice. It's in the process. It's coming out summer of 2024.
And then the title is B2B Influencers.
It's basically B2B influencer marketing, and how to use it within marketing to drive like maximum leverage.
Interesting. That's super cool. And it's not just internal influencers there you're talking about. You're also talking about like tapping into finding people who are influencers in that space, I'm guessing.
Exactly. Because that's, I think, you know, whether you call it influencer marketing, creator marketing, whatever, like companies are going to start to leverage creators because, I mean, let's be honest, a lot of these channels are saturated. Yeah. You have to turn to additional people that have the trust and authority that you want to tap into. And so I think we're already seeing early adopters in 2023. In tech specifically. I think in 2024, we'll see even more. I think by 2025, we'll see mass adoption in tech within this whole creator economy.
That makes sense. It's something that we've started exploring this quarter at AppQs. And what the genesis of it was around how organic has taken a hit, especially with like AI and search. Yeah. And like, we need to find like a new channel. And it was like, okay, who is like the voice? So we sponsor like Andrew Kaplan, who's like a voice around user onboarding and, you know, other folks with that. So I think you're totally correct with that. Like when things are changing so much in like search and things are saturated with ads, like it's getting more expensive. Like, who do you go to? You go to people who own their audience and people who have a list, who trust that their voice for that specific thing. And I'm seeing a trend more also with those influencers, you know, like Kevin Indig or Elena Verna, they're posting up about the product right in LinkedIn.
Yep.
Is that, I've only seen that like the last 6 or so months. Is that something that you're going to see more and more going forward? Or is that like, this is.
I truly think, like, I'm betting my entire career that this is like path forward. Like, I'm literally all in. Like, we built our own Patak. We built our own media network. So we have a media network that runs on Audience Plus right now. And so we have 5 shows that are currently on it. We're bringing on 20 shows in Q1.
Wow.
That are going to power. Yeah. So like we're making it a place where creators come, and not only creators come, but then brands are going to want to come and partner with these creators. So it drives a whole monetization model around creator brand on an owned media network.
That's super cool, man. I'm super excited for that feature. And when did you say that book is coming out? Where can people sign up for it?
Yeah, so if you go to tacnetwork.com, it's actually live now. So we've got, I have a show on there called Creators Gonna Create. There's a couple other shows on there, but we're gonna be bringing on a lot of shows that already exist, plus other shows that we're building out under this umbrella. And just, I mean, for the shows that already exist, we're doing it because it's an additional channel for distribution for them. And for us, we leverage SEO to drive growth of the network overall.
That's super cool. And then your book is on this website as well, or is it like...
So that will come in... I don't really have that anywhere right now. It'll be summer of 2024, but if you... I have a few creator 101 guides coming out. So like I have this 12-chapter ebook that's like, hey, if you're a creator... If you want to figure out the very start, it's very tactical. There's resources in every chapter. That's coming out like the second week of January. Wow. I'm going to probably give it away for free. And then I have a 201 and a 301 as you kind of progress as a creator, coming out in like February and March, leading up to the book.
That will be on your website.
Yeah, exactly. It'll be on the website, and then it'll be on my LinkedIn as well.
Nice. Awesome. Well, thank you for that. Let's shift gears. Yeah, that's been fun talking about people first go-to-market model and customer-led growth. I want to talk about career power-ups for you. You've been in marketing. You said you've been marketing many years. Alias, Air Meat, now you're at Tact. what's helped you in your career, like accelerate it? It could be community, it could be people, it could be a tactic. I'm really curious as to what's powered up your marketing career so far.
I would say building relationship like horizontally and vertically within an organization. So as a marketer, for example, you're not only building your relationships with your marketing peers, but you're also building it, you know, with executives within other departments. Like marketing lots of times wants to stay siloed to what they do. But the only way you can truly grow is like having relationships with sales, CS, product, engineering, right, finance. Like you've got to like be able to be okay with building relationships outside of that. Because one, you'll never know, hey, these people might help you for, you know, say you get laid off. They might be able to help you, and like that relationship that you build might go a long way. Or if you need something as a marketer, I've had this before where it's like, I need a little bit extra budget approved and finance loved me and was able to help me out. And again, it's just, it's the whole people first mindset. Like relationships are everything. And so in your organization, you've got to be able to build it, you know, both vertically and horizontally.
And when horizontally is like across the function, vertically is like finding somebody and just building a deeper relationship with them. Is that what I understand?
Exactly. Yeah. Outside of other departments and like further up like the chain. I mean, especially if you're
up the chain.
Yeah. Especially if you're a marketer that wants to, I don't know, maybe be a CMO one day or maybe be a CEO one day. Like, don't limit yourself to just marketing.
Is that what you want? You want to be a CMO one day? I'm curious what.
Honestly, now that I own my own business, like I wish I did this a lot sooner.
Right.
To be honest with you, it's like every day, like you don't report to anyone. You do what you want. You take on the work that you want to do. Right. And it's like if you don't like how someone's acting, you tell them to go jump off a. Yeah, kick rocks and head out because I don't need your money.
That's so good. I like that. Yeah, I mean, I think that's something that people, marketers, need to explore more, because like there's this path, like, oh, you like, how do you progress your marketing career? It's like, oh, you become a director, become a VP, then CMO. Right. And I look at some CMOs in their schedule, even my boss, Eric, VP marketing, like he's stuck in a lot of meetings, right? And is that what people want? Like, is that what I want? Is that, you know, what you want?
Yeah, it's not what I want. I was a senior director at AirMeet, and the amount of meetings that I sat in, at some point you become, you don't even become like you're doing marketing anymore.
Right.
You're a meeting shepherd. You sit in meetings all day and you talk about all of the things you're going to do for the next meeting. And like lots of times you sit in these meetings and it's basically just one big circle where there's no outcome that actually comes of the meeting.
If you enjoyed this episode, you'd love the Marketing Power-Ups newsletter. I share the actionable takeaways and break down the frameworks of world-class marketers. You can go to marketingpowerups.com to subscribe, and you'll instantly unlock the three best frameworks that top marketers use to hit their KPIs consistently and wow their colleagues. I want to say thank you to you for listening, and please like and follow Marketing Power-Ups on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. If you feel extra generous, head to leave a review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Leave a comment on YouTube. It goes a long way in others finding out about Marketing Power-Ups. Thanks to Mary Sullivan for creating the artwork and design, and thank you to Faisal Kaigo for editing the intro video. And of course, thank you for listening. That's all for now. Have a powered up day.
Marketing Power-Ups! Until the next episode...